ugly mug right there. Today, I'm going to focus on three volume patterns that I've been using in today's markets. These are a little unusual. We'll start out with kind of the normal fare, if you will. But the ones I'm going to really focus on today are a bit counterintuitive. These are not taught in the traditional technical analysis books. They are not your classic patterns. They're a bit different. And I would say that in some ways, at least some of them are counterintuitive, which actually is one of the reasons why. Because when they're counterintuitive, that's that the vast majority of people are not using them. And of course, the vast majority of people do lose money trading. The fact that a lot of actually is one of the reasons that they do work, because you don't want to be one of the majority, you want to be one of the minorities. That's the minority of people. Quick little plug here. By the way, sorry, I got nothing for sale today, so you can put your wallets away. I actually kind of dropped the ball there. All I got is free stuff for you today. So no pitch at the end. I just don't really have anything to sell you, but I got a lot of stuff to give you. So the first thing is my Top Dog Trading podcast. Check it out on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever podcasts are available, I am there. And a lot of very unique lessons there that I don't share like on YouTube or Facebook or anything, because it's an audio platform. Basically, totally free. Check it out anytime you want. Love to have you as part of the podcast community. We've done pretty well with it for some darn reason. Who knows? But I guess people like it because they voted us up to number 10 in the investor category. Not sure if we're still there, quite honestly. But we were even ahead of Jim Cramer's Mad Money, which is kind of amazing because he's kind of a big deal. Love him or hate him, he's very popular. And anyway, we snuck ahead him by one. Probably lost that position by now. Anyway, we got that. I haven't checked recently. Here's our obligatory legal statements. And I wanted to read this. I'm not going to read it all word for word. I'm sure you don't want me to. But what I want to tell you is that these regulatory statements are not just legalese. Don't think of them as just that. They are much more, and they are very important because if you think about it, what the regulators have done for us is to give us a gift, the gift of research, the gift of honesty, the gift of transparency. So they have gone out and they have found out why indeed most people lose money, and they've reported back to us, and that's what these statements really are. So take these as a gift, an educational gift. And even though, I mean, one of the problems is these are so ubiquitous. We see them everywhere. And so we become blind to them, thinking, it's just a bunch of legalese. Well, no, this is a very powerful, this is where your education should begin, actually, because this is your defense part of your game where you're going to stay out of trouble. So even if you've been trading for 50 years, like I have, 52 years to be exact, almost 53, read it again, because it's there to protect you. And believe me, it will, if you listen to it. Okay, so now let's get into the teaching about volume. So when all is said and done about trading, what makes the trading world go round? What makes prices go up? What makes prices go down? What makes them do what they do? And there's a lot of great tools out there that you can use, many, many great tools. But at the core of market movement, it's all about supply demand. And that's it. It comes all down to that as a basic concept. So just like the economy, supply demand, just like buying a car. How high is that price going to be? Well, depends on the supply demand. If a lot of people want that particular model of car, the manufacturer's not made very many of those cars. Guess what? Price is going to go up. In fact, that actually happened to me. It was a cool car, came out, the first iteration of this particular model. And, you know, the manufacturer wasn't quite sure because it was the first iteration. They weren't sure, will this really be a popular model, kind of an edgy car? It's very, was not your run-of-the-mill vanilla kind of car. And so they're kind of taking a risk. And as it turned out, it was very popular, very popular. So there was an imbalance of supply demand. There was a lot of demand, very little supply. So when the model came into the dealership, I was one of the first to go out and buy one of those puppy dogs. And guess what? They didn't have any on the lot. They were gone. They were already sold. I'm like, dang. So I had to get a list. He says, well, I'll give you a call and we'll get some more in. So he gave me a call when some more came in, and I went right down there, toot sweet, and guess what? He said, oh, sorry, you missed it. They're all gone. I'm like, are you serious? Dude, I just called this morning. I came in this afternoon after work, and they're all gone. Same day? He says, yep. So I said, well, keep me on the list. So he did. So then this time, I went down there after he called me, and a new supply had come in, and I went within like an hour. I just took that call and I left and I went over to the dealership. And guess what? They had one car left, one of those models left. So where'd all they go? He says, well, we only got like five. And I called other people too, and four other people came and bought them. I said, okay. So then I started the normal price haggling, right? And see how low he could go. Guess what he said? He says, oh, no. We're not negotiating with this car. He said, I got too many people who can, in fact, they'll even be here. I don't even have to call them. There'll be more people coming in probably in 5 minutes. I said, all right, I'll buy it at the MSRP, manufacturer's suggested retail price. He says, oh, no. I mean, what do you mean, no? He said, I'm willing to pay, the retail price. That's unusual for cars. He says, now you're going to be paying $10,000 above manufacturer's suggested retail price. I said, what you talking about, Willis? I just couldn't believe it. He was not joking. He was serious. He says, fine, believe, I don't care. He says, every car I've sold has been $10,000 over retail. Dang. So guess what I did? I paid $10,000 over retail. Now, was that a great financial decision? Nope. But I wanted the darn car. I was very, very excited. And it was a cool car. It was the coolness factor. So did I have irrational exuberance? Yes, I did. Remember Alan Greenspan talking about the financial bubble? His irrational exuberance back in the tech days, right? With the tech bubble. Did Warren Buffett participate in the tech bubble? No, he did not. Why? Because he did not have irrational exuberance. My point here is that the markets, they over the long term, they are fairly balanced and equitable and reasonable, logical. And that's where your fundamental analysis becomes important. And that's why Warren Buffett out there, he's always looking for good companies that have a good internal structure, a good product, good process, all that kind of stuff. And he tries to get them undervalued. He's a value investor. So, but he doesn't catch a lot of big moves in the market. Why is that? That's because a lot of the big moves occur because of emotional reasons. And yes, I have not changed the slide yet. I'm kind of in podcast mode, I guess, right now, audio, but we got a lot more coming on the slides. But this is a really important point, is that the markets, especially short-term, and short-term can last for a year or two or even three sometimes. Think of the real estate bubble, think of the technology bubble, think of the Bitcoin bubble. If you're as old as I am, think of the tulip bubble. Well, actually, I wasn't even around back then. But these things are, cyclical. These are actual occurrences. The market does behave emotionally at times. And so therefore, if you're looking to trade based on logic, short-term, you're going to miss out on a lot of big wins because most of the big moves occur because of emotion. Then after that, the market comes back to its mind, comes back to reason. But that's all nice. That slow and steady wins the race over the long term. But don't expect the markets to make sense because people often don't make sense. And it's people that trade the market. And if people get really excited about some sort of new industry, cannabis lately, new technologies that are constantly coming out, a new drug, whatever, they speculate on it and they will trade on pure emotion and that thing can go screaming high. But over the long term, it always comes back to reason. All right, but if you're a short-term trader, you can trade those emotional moves. All right, so supply demand, that's really what it's all about. Whether it makes sense or not, it's just based on what the people trading the market, if they want it or if they don't want it. I remember I'm not a trained sales guy by any stretch of the imagination. I don't have the personality for sales. But I remember one salesperson who told me that the only objection you cannot overcome is, I just don't want it. I just don't want it. I actually ended up marrying that salesperson. But seriously, not even joking. But yeah, that's the only objection you can't overcome is like, I'm just interested. And that's the same in the market. You'll have great companies out there. The other side of it, you can have great companies, very fundamentally sound, very financially stable, great products that don't go anywhere. They just don't move. Why? Nobody's interested. They just don't care. They're not excited about it. So now nothing moves or nothing measures that supply demand as well as volume does. The amount of shares, contracts, or lots going through the market. That is the way that supply demand is plotted and identified and put under a microscope. So the general concept, we'll start with just the general concept. This is the classic analysis. The classic analysis definitely still has has some merit, okay? But it doesn't give you an edge. That's the thing. Anything that's classic, anything that's traditional, technical analysis, all that stuff, it's not bad. It just doesn't give you an edge. Why? Because everybody in his hierarchy knows it. It's all on the internet for free. It's all in the big classic books everybody reads. And therefore, there's no edge, especially now with the information age where everybody has access to all that information. So, but the basic concept is still important to know, very important to know, in fact. And that is that as volume increases, the market moves up, indicating rising demand with low supply. Now, that's for a bullish position, obviously. And then the opposite, increasing volume as the market goes down, indicates rising A with low demand. And that's your bearish trend. All right. So just to kind of give you a little visual representation here, since I've been doing so much audio. Let's see. Oh, there it is. I got my little cursor pasted on there, but that's not my real cursor. That's from the screen capture. So just to show you what I'm talking about here, bullish supply demand, volume confirms the move up in price and the uptrend in this case. So price is going up, volume's going up with it. A little pause. We get a little pause here. Volume comes out of the market. Okay, point of indecision. People are not quite sure. What should I do now? Is it going to go higher? Is it going to go lower? Is it going to stay the same? I don't know. I missed that first impulse move. But then after it goes sideways and doesn't come down, then people start thinking, oh, you know what? I think this move is bullish. So more participants come in buying, as indicated by increasing volume, market goes up. Okay, pretty simple stuff. Now, next level of sophistication, again, still pretty simple, but sometimes people have a little trouble doing this one because it feels upside down to them. But it is the same concept. Market's going down in price and an increase in volume. So that means strength down. The direction is down, but the volume keeps going up. And so that is the kind of basic vision that we would have on a chart for a strong downtrend. All right, that's all well and good. Now, so let's get into stuff that's a little more counterintuitive. So taking to the next level, here is volume pattern number 1 of 3 that I'll share with you today. So this volume keeps you on the right side of the market against the trend, against the trend. So if you've ever asked, just to get very practical here, if you've ever asked the question, God dang it, I wonder, you know, why did the market go up? I bought the market, and then as soon as I got in, the market went the opposite direction. Is it that my broker's trading against me? You know, what the heck's going on here? It just seems like I can't catch a break. Market's always going in the opposite direction of my trade. Ever feel that way? Okay. So here's one way to identify that. So market's going up, price, in other words, is going up. But look at this, volume is going down. You can just kind of draw these general trend lines here. So volume's going down. That means this market is moving up on weakness. That's what we call a market going up on weakness. So there's two types of trends, and it's not just uptrend, downtrend. The two types of trends that I'm talking about here are strong trends and weak trends. So there's uptrends, downtrends, that is true, but then there are also strong trends and weak trends. So what is the difference between a strong trend and a go up directionally, trend is up, but there's not much strength behind it. And in this case, strength is defined by volume. Volume is like the weight of the market. How big are those orders? How much demand is pushing that up? So it can go up, you know, and there's still demand, right? The volume is still, you know, somewhat significant, but it's declining. And therefore, I would never buy this trend because I would say, wow, it is going up, but interest is coming out or demand is coming out. Therefore, if I buy this, the odds are, and we're always dealing with statistics, of course, never certainties, that, yeah, it's probably not going to follow through. Now, so that's step one. So that would be kind of a leading indication. Volume is not an indicator, by the way. It's just a statistic. It is what is. It doesn't indicate anything other than, you know, outside of itself. So that's an indication as opposed to an indicator that, down, and therefore I can think ahead and think, do I want to buy a first retrace in the trend or something like that? And I would say, nah, I'm not going to do that because interest is coming out of the market. Now, the second step then is as the price comes back down, and it comes down pretty hard, now volume goes up. So that to me now is spelling out, oh yeah, we are having a trend reversal. Now, if the trend went up and volume just went flat, that's just indecision. But this is not indecision. This is, yeah, a little bit of a leading indication here, going up with decreasing volume, coming down with increasing volume. So now I've changed my sentiment. Even all the way back here, I actually changed my sentiment from bullish to bearish or neutral. Then what distinguished from bearish to neutral, to isolate one of those two, is that when it came down on increasing volume. So I'm bearish to neutral, not bullish. And then when it comes down on increasing volume, then I'm like, okay, forget neutral. Now I'm bearish. Okay, makes sense? Okay, so let's go to, actually, let me just check in real quick. Does that make sense to people? Type in yes, no, I don't know, whatever you want to type in. Let's get some commentary here, get a little feedback. Since we're here live, we can get a little more engaged here. And if you need some more explanation, I'll be happy to give it. All right. Thank you. Haluk says, yeah. All right. Awesome. Okay, good. Yeah, it's not rocket surgery. All right. Now, the next one is a little more counterintuitive. That one's not too counterintuitive, right? Just a little smidge. This one is more counterintuitive, and this one is really powerful. This is one, by the way, that I look for home run trades. Anybody want to make a lot of money? Okay, no guarantees implied, by the way. But this is one of the patterns that I look for big winners. It's not they turn into a big winner, but this handshake all written all over it. So I like this trade a lot. And let me share a couple of the nuances with you. So this one, this is pattern number 2 out of 3, counterintuitive low volume pattern that provides reliable entries. So, you know, when people look at volume, the common teaching, the big pattern concept is to look for big volume patterns, high volume patterns, volume spikes, that sort of thing. And that's cool. That's good. Yes, that has, again, some reasonableness behind it. So this is not to say that the other way doesn't work. This is just a way of looking at it kind of in an opposite way, that there's also another opportunity here, which does not have a volume spike. Most people think, well, low volume is just neutral or indecision. And sometimes it is, but the dollars are in the details. The dollars are in the details in which the patterns can actually indicate big moves instead of just the market settling down and going neutral and going choppy and going sideways. So here it is. So we come down, boom, 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 and we get our famous volume spike. Now, this is where a lot of people would look to maybe go long, right? Because, oh, big interest, big demand, that's how they'd be looking at it. Or they would just be saying, okay, that's an exhaustion pattern, and you've got a climax of volume. Here's what I do. And I actually had a friend who used to trade these in options, by the way, back to our friend who trades options. And he was one of my options mentors, and he used to trade these as reversals for a while. It was one of his rather newer strategies. And it worked pretty well for him. And then he went through a 3-month dry spell where he was kind of sort of drifting down. So he was not a happy camper to be working with during those 3 months. But anyway, I was with him. And so I kind of was looking at that with him as well. And I came up with my own little thing here. I'm like, wait a minute, these are not working very well. And I just looked at chart after chart, pattern after pattern. And I came up with something that works pretty, pretty good. So here's what I came to spikes. Boom. And a lot of people look at these for reverse. I said, as I watched these patterns time after time, month after month, and even for a whole year, I'd watch it come down. Now, this gets into a little bit of detail. This, write down these details. These are the ones that work. It's not just enough that you get a volume spike. So you get that. Let's start at the beginning. Step one is actually that you have an extended trend. So the first part of this trade is that you have to have an extended trend, really overextended. So in Top Dog Trading, what we do is we have our own wave count. It's not Elliott waves. I don't personally use Elliott waves, although I think they're great and there's a lot of good stuff there. But I created my own way of counting waves, which is very objective. And we don't limit wave counts to 5 waves. And there's a specific reason for doing that. The way we do it, it's very simple, but again, super objective. Everyone who does the wave count will get the exact same number of waves every single time. And we acknowledge that 5 waves is the average number of waves in a trend. But since our method is more just a mathematical formula, our way, we can get more than 5 waves. So if you get 5 waves, that's average. There's no edge there. But if you get into 7 waves, and unfortunately, I don't have time to to discuss, you know, how we calculate waves. If you want to do that, you can learn that later. But if we get into seven waves, that means we are now into an overly extended trend, beyond average, beyond the bell curve for probabilities. And so now that's step one in identifying a really oversold market. Indicators like stochastics, RSI, and all that stuff, they're not really great for measuring oversold because they're bounded indicators. So any indicator that is bounded mathematically is not the best way to measure overbought, oversold, because they have an artificial floor and an artificial ceiling. The best way to measure overbought or oversold is by how far it moves away from the mean and how close it gets to the edge of the probability bell curve, and then the odds of it going to revert to the mean. So anyway, long little explanation there, but that's the best way to do it because it's based on statistics and not artificial ceilings and floors. So now we've gone beyond our five-wave pattern. And then we wait for it. And now we want it to make another low, but here's the key. The next low is on low volume. The next low breaks this low here, but just a smidge. So I call this piercing instead of breaking. So technically, yes, this low is lower than that low, but if you look, the high of these bars are above the high or above the low of these bars. And so this is a pierce. This would be equivalent to a stop run pattern, okay? And that is what we want. We don't want it to go down a lot more. We want it to go down just a little bit more. Just think that they're like running stops here. So amateurs are coming in late, by the way. General rule of trading, professionals are always in early. Amateurs are always chasing the market. Professionals are always in earlier than the retailers. By the time the retailers come in, the pros are selling to them. And this is what they talk about when they talk about the money changing hands from the strong hands to the weak hands. And by the way, there's also another concept here. You've probably heard the saying, buy the rumor, sell the news. That's another way of saying, get in early and don't wait until everything is obvious and clear. Now, that slogan applies to, news, quarterly earnings, product announcements, whatever it might be, economic reports. Okay, that's news. But that type of news also applies to technical analysis. So in other words, by the time everybody looks at a chart and they see a trend, a head and shoulders pattern, a triangle, a double top, double bottom, a wedge, It's too late. That's news in the sense of technical analysis that everybody in this parakeet sees. Well, the problem is everybody in their parakeet's losing money because, as we already established, most people lose money. So if you wait till everybody sees it and you trade what everybody is trading, guess what? You're part of the herd mentality, and you don't want to be part of the herd because the herd loses money, H-E-R-D, the masses. You want to be one of the professionals. You want to be one of the people get in before it's obvious. So in a sense, you're buying the rumor of the technical analysis, and that's the only way to make money. By that time, it's all obvious. All the losers, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way, by the way, I just mean that in a very literal way, and then everybody else is getting in. That's the exact wrong time. It's kind of counterintuitive, because in a lot of areas of life, you want the most confirmation possible. When you get the most confirmation possible in many areas of life, that's when you should engage in it. That's when in trading, just the opposite is one of the reasons trading is so challenging. So anyway, this is how we do it. So we had a lower low, but just barely, just enough to mess with people who went short here, basically, is what it is. Low volume. What's that indicate? The big boys, the hedge funds, the institutions, the pension plans, the banks, they're not participating in this anymore. This pattern right here is the shifting of money from the strong hands to the weak hands. They're getting out here. Boom. Now, what's interesting is, see, that's why this is early. Not everybody in this parakeet is getting in here. The retailers are not buying this. And up she goes. Okay, so what's in your favor here is just, again, that back to the bell curve example, we have gone to the edge of the bell curve, because remember, step one is this only works if you are in an overextended trend. We've gone far away from the mean, and it's reverting back to the mean now. We've gotten into that, third standard deviation, second or third standard deviation on the bell curve and reverse back to the mean, but before other people are getting in, and that's our edge. So here's another little example, by the way. It can also, this is a second best pattern, not a first best pattern. So here's the same trade, but in this one, okay, again, we're in an extended trend. We don't break the low of this low here. So it can be a higher low, but the volume pattern is the same. Big volume here, very little volume here. Now, the first pattern where it slightly breaks this low, that's my favorite. That's my favorite. This would be my second favorite, all right? So here you don't quite have the same edge of the running of the stops here, like the running of the bulls. Okay, this would be the running of the bears. I just made that up, running of the bears, where you got the people coming in bearish and they take out that low. So this is second best. You're giving up one piece of evidence. But now if you want to be more conservative, if you don't quite have the stomach for the first pattern, what you can do is instead of buying this, you can wait until we break the high of this, the bar here. So we got this low, high, low. Wait for it to break the high of that, of the high between the two lows. And then look for a volume pattern to come back in. Look for volume to pick up and then buy there. So that'd be another more conservative option. All right. Now, what you're doing by that is you're giving up this. So if you put your stop down here and you enter up here, your risk is a lot bigger. So this is a common trade-off in trading, is that the earlier you get in, yeah, your probability of success maybe is not as high because you're being a little more aggressive, but your risk is very, very, very small. On the other hand, if you wait for everything to be confirmed, okay, you might be right, might make some money, but because you're in late, now your risk on the trade is going to be bigger. And by the way, when I talk about this, how do you establish, like on this, okay, what would you establish that your risk is? Well, risk in the term of stop, where does your stop belong? There is a very basic rule of stops. So stops go where you're wrong. That's the basic principle. Stops go where you're wrong. What does that mean? When are you wrong? You're wrong when the reason for your trade no longer exists. So the reason for our trade would be, you know, this low here. We're trading off of that low volume. So really, we've got our low, our high, our low. Ultimately, in the truest sense of the term, we're not wrong. This pattern isn't broken unless it goes below this low. So therefore, a bigger risk. Now, you might choose a different risk, right? You might say, with the low of that bar, or if it breaks below the low of, you know, where I got in, then I'll put my stop there. But again, you got stopped out when you didn't need to. So you can put stops anywhere you want, but people tend to be very conservative with their stops. And that's why they get stopped out a lot, because they're not putting them where the reason for entering the trade no longer exists. They're putting their stops in places where they just are afraid. It's emotional based. It's that, oh, I can't afford to lose that kind of money. Well, if you can't afford to lose that kind of money, then yeah, you should not be, your stop can't be there. But maybe you shouldn't have taken the trade, because if you can't afford to place your stop where it really belongs structurally on the chart, then you should not take the trade, because you're going to get stopped out too often just due to the noise and the randomness of the market without the price structure being broken. Okay, let's move on to volume pattern numero tres. Set. Okay, we'll go to Japanese. All right, so now this is a really cool one. Again, this one's a little bit counterintuitive, and this is a mismatch between price and volume that leads to explosive moves quite often. So it's called a squat bar. I did not make this up. I learned this from a friend, but it works pretty darn good. Check it out for yourself. So here's what it is. We are just looking, well, let's take the big picture here. So we've gotten, by the way, this red line is the 50 MA. This black line is the 15 EMA, for those who are wondering. So price comes down, hits the moving average, kind of bounces between them. We call that a pinball pattern. Breaks below the 50 MA. Now, breaking below the 50 MA, that's my line in the sand between a bull and bear market. Now, it just kind of goes sideways, right? There's a little bit of oscillation, but not much. So it's just within a range here, goes sideways. Now, what we do is we look for a narrow range bar and a wide range volume bar. Wide range volume bar. Okay, so that is the key. That is the structure between this bar, price, narrow range, volume, wide range. Now, that's kind of counterintuitive, because if you look back here, most of the bars that were wide range volume bars were wide range price bars. That's the norm. This, a little abnormal. It doesn't even quite make sense, does it? Why would there be so much volume coming into the market, but price range of price is narrow? Well, what that is a buildup of pressure. Think of it like a pressure cooker. So it is true. People are coming in. A lot of shares, a lot of contracts, a lot of lots, and a lot of lots. I kind of like that. A lot of lots. But price isn't going anywhere yet. It's going to go somewhere, because eventually, and pretty darn soon too, because there's a lot of people of taking positions, and that's got to go somewhere, and it does. And so this also plays off a cycle in the market that I call the expansion contraction cycle. It has to do with volatility. So cycles are not just the ups and the downs, in the price patterns. It is that. That's one type of cycle. Another type of cycle is seasonal cycle, and there's many different types of cycles. But there's a volatility cycle in the market too, where the market goes into wide range moves and then narrow range moves. Wide range moves, narrow range moves. So this is a very narrow range move. First of all, we've had a narrow range move across bars here, and then even within one bar. Now see, this bar had this is a very narrow range bar too, low volume. This one's a narrow range bar, big volume. Oh, that's what we're looking for. Now we're looking for an explosive move. We're looking for the volatility to come back in, to go from a low volatility to a high volatility cycle. So what we look for is really just basically that. I just get in below the low of that bar and you trade it in the direction that it moves, whichever direction it moves. Now you just jump on board and ride it. Okay, very nice. Trade these, by the way, all of these, it should go without saying, but just to make sure, any of these, trade them on a simulator or demo account first. Definitely do not do anything new in your trading, anything with real money right out of the gate. So always use a simulator or demo account and trade it for a little while with just funny money, no real money, and see how it works for you, see how it resonates with your brain cells. And you don't need to trade, 100 different setups. In fact, really all you need is one really good setup that resonates with you. And then just become an expert at that setup. And if one of these happens to be it, great. Okay, a couple of bonus patterns here. I'll go through these a little quickly because I still got my cool thing I just added here today before we got started. So here we come down in a very dramatic move. All right, now this blue line here was not here when we first came down. Come back off it. And what I do is once we come down into a dramatic move, put in a low and bounce up, and we've got big volume, that's when I draw my support line. So when you're wondering where should I put support resistance, one of the places that I always do is where we had big volume come down with a swing low. Because remember, it's all about supply demand. So at that time, they decided that, oh, wait a minute. Okay, we have switched supply demand. We've had a shift in that supply demand of market participants at this level based on the price level and the interest level. And people are like, no. So the people who have this, what is this? Okay, this is the cues. So they're saying, you know what? I'm not going to take any less for this. I own the cues and I'm not selling for any less than this. So that's the line on the sand. I'm not selling this car for any less than that, to use our original analogy. Nope, not going to do it. And so then the price goes back up. Okay, boom, boom, boom. But that doesn't dramatically go against. See, this is another example. Volume spike. Should I trade that as a reversal? Well, sometimes they do work. Sometimes they don't. Remember, could be bullish or could be neutral. In this case, it's neutral for a while. And it's neutral until, here we go again, the stop run pattern just barely gets below that low. Highs of these bars do not get below the low of that bar. Volume comes back into the market. Now it goes up. Now we get our big move up. And that is a beautiful thing. Okay. Oh, wait, did I see if I finished that? No, I didn't. I knew there was another one here. Okay. Bonus numero dos. So now we're in an uptrend. We come back. We break the 15 EMA. We break the 50 EMA. It come on down. So sometimes volume can be a little tricky to read because it is a little choppy, right? You get some bars. Some of these bars really stand out like that one. But then, between that and that and that and that, is this high volume? Is that low volume? Where's the line of demarcation here? So in order to help to kind of smooth that out, to determine what are volume levels that are high and which ones are low, I use a line, a 20 period simple moving average. And yes, I do want it to be simple because I want it to be kind of smooth. And I use that 20 simple moving average and I put it on my volume histogram or the same, subgraphs in order to kind of just give me that line of demarcation. So I say anything above 20 SMA is big volume. Anything below it is low volume. So you see here we're going sideways and we get low volume because we're below the 20 SMA. Their big volume comes on down. Go back to low volume. What happens? Market kind of, it comes down a little bit, but not dramatically. And then it goes back up. And then as the market comes back down with big volume, meaning above the 20 SMA. Okay. So just kind of a way to smooth things out for you and give you a line of demarcation. Okay. So now here's the extra bonus that I just added here and haven't done this for a long time. So you guys are getting this fresh. So now this is a way of really parsing. So this is especially for those of you who are day traders. traders, active trading, your day trading, swing trading, whatever. So I added this because we got some day traders here. So this is specifically for day traders. It can be used for swing traders a little bit, but really most effectively and easily used for day traders. So you see, we got our time column here. This is called a time and sales window. Here's our time. Type of trade, by the way, in this column, what you can normally do is there's an option to just put all bids and asks, every trade that enters the market, whether it's filled or not. I don't like to look at the bids and asks. In my case, you can do that. That is a choice. I've got a friend who does that very effectively. But for me, in my house, we just look at the actual executed trades. A bid and ask means it's not executed yet. When it says trade, that means it's an executed trade. The money has changed hands. And then the price at which it's traded and the size. So this is the futures market. We got a lot of futures day traders here. So we use that example. And this is the number of contracts on one trade. So this represents each individual trade. You can see how closely spaced they are together, all of these within 1 minute. And the let me see my next slide here if I specify this. Not really. So let me say it here. So I customize this column to be only trades, executed trades. I customize this volume or this column to show me, okay, how many contracts traded through here, but I filter it. So I filter it to show me only, in this case, and you can, you know, vary this depending on your preference, but in this example, I filtered it so it's only going to show me those trades that were executed where one individual trade was 20 contracts or more. So there's trades going through for one contract, two contracts, three contracts. I don't see them on here because I've chosen not to. I'm filtering those out. Why would I filter those out? I'm filtering them out because I want to track and hunt down the smart money, the whales. I'm not interested in the minnows right now. I'm interested in the professional money, the smart money, those 20% or 10% of people who are making money. I want to see an x-ray as to what are they doing? And this is that x-ray into what they're doing. These are the people I want to trade with. So I want to see, what are they doing? All right. I think that might be valuable. Now, the slide got messed up here a little bit. But anyway, some charts, this is just in passing anyway, some charting platforms will have an indicator called block trades. Some do, some don't. If they don't, well, maybe go on the forums or whatever of your charting platform and see if they have them. But block trades, that's what these are. These are block trades where you get a, 20 or more or set it to whatever filter that you want. And it'll actually plot it on your chart. So you notice not every bar has a volume bar underneath it. That's because it's not trading all the volume, or not showing all the volume. It's only plotting the big trades, and you can put it right under your chart. So if your software has the ability to do that, pretty cool. Now, here's something I came up with that, well, I don't know. Every time I say I came up with, someone else says, oh, no, it's nothing under the sun. But here's something that I did come up with it, not to say I'm the only one. But so here's what I do. I now bring up two time and sales windows. And one, I will set, let's see, this one I think we set to 10. Yeah, this one I set to a minimum of 10 contracts. I don't want to see anything less than 10 contracts over here being traded. But then I bring up another one. And on this one, I don't want to see anything more than two contracts being traded. So what am I doing? I'm looking at the big money traders and comparing it with the little money traders. And I'm looking at the same time. Notice the prices are the same, 12.05.75, all the way down the board. Okay. So the price is the same. What's the difference? Are the big money buying or selling? The little money traders, they're selling. The big money traders, they're buying. Which side of the market would you want to be on in this situation? Somebody type that in, and I'm going to give you 1,000 Top Dog Trading admiration points if you can get that right. And Top Dog Trading admiration points are worth exactly nothing monetarily. But what they are worth is you will get the admiration of everybody here in the webinar today. Yes, Steve, good. Adrian, excellent. Martine, good. Haluk, bye. Yeah. So unlike very goodbye with everybody, you just got the admiration, your 15 seconds of fame with everybody here. So, and now this is not counterintuitive, is it? This actually is one of those things that happens to be very intuitive, pretty dang. And that's great. But again, very few people see this. Very few people are watching this. And that's your edge. That's your edge. When you put these two together, it becomes pretty darn clear. Okay. So let's finish up here. My time is almost up. So we'll stay on target here. So this kind of stuff works for pretty much any market because, well, we're talking about volume, right? And volume is every market has volume. Stocks, forex, futures, commodities, options. One little caveat I do have to give you, if you're trading spot forex, then depending on your type of broker and its data feed, for most spot forex, they don't give you actual volume for two reasons. Number one, the type of volume they give you is called tick volume, which is actually, it'll click up and down by a tick when a trade is made. So here the context of spot forex is a tick is a trade, regardless of how many lots are in that trade. So that kind of messes you up. Doesn't work as well for that. What you can do is do a little workaround. And if you get the futures currencies, which is all forex, everyone thinks forex is spot forex, not necessarily. Forex just means foreign exchange. So if you look at the futures forex market, it will give you real volume. And by the way, the other reason that spot forex doesn't give you real volume is there's no central exchange for it. And so therefore, you're just getting the volume of the data feeds provided by your particular broker, not the universal global volume. And it also works for time frame. So it's all just relative, how much volume is coming in that minute, that 5 minutes, that 60 minutes, that day, whatever you have your time interval set to. And here are my freebies. Like I said, I got nothing to sell you today. So let's give you a bunch of good free stuff. I just gave you an hour of good free stuff. And you're welcome to take that, play with it, experiment with it, use it. If you want more good freebies, then head on over to topdogtrading.com/free. And now what you're going to get there is one of my courses. I'm actually giving away one of my mini courses for free. So try before you buy, or heck, try and never buy. I don't care. Do whatever you want. So I would love to work with you. I hope you do decide to get one of my full courses. But if you don't, that's cool. So this mini course is all about how professional traders trade differently than amateurs. You know, I've referred to that a lot in passing here. So there's a lot more to it. Give you a little sample of it today. What I'm going to give you in that too is not just theory or info. I'm also going to give you something very practical. I'm going to give you an actual trade setup that I call the rubber band trade. I trade this still all the time. Anytime this thing sets up, I still trade it. In other words, it's not a has-been trade. It's something I still use every day. Works great. It's a reversion of the mean mathematical model. Works for day trading or swing trading. Works for forex, futures, stocks, whatever you trade. So in this little course, you get 5 20-minute video tutorials. At the end of each one, you get a little quiz to make sure you got the information before you move on to the next one. You understood it. And also, I'm giving you an extra bonus, which is my cycle indicator. So this is how we time our entries and exits with precision. This is like my little scalpel tool to help me know exactly the penny, the pip, or the tick of when timing to get into any bigger structure, price structure. And that one takes about an hour to get set up in your charts and to explain the details of it. So we do that on a separate webinar, but it's free. It's all free. So the place to get all this stuff is right there. And I just typed it into the chat box. Also, by the way, topdogtrading.com/free, and enjoy. All right. So 2 minutes to spare. That is all that I've got for you. Should we take questions, or do we need to move on to the next speaker?
Yeah, we have about another minute if there's any other questions.
All right. I will then set aside an entire 60 seconds of my precious time to answer questions. Oh, I see. There's a couple questions here already I didn't see earlier. All right. Do I use Ichimoku for confirmation? I personally do not. You can if you like it. Personally, I don't do it, but that doesn't mean it's not good. There's, you know, a lot of good stuff out there that I don't personally use. In fact, there's so many good things out there that can't possibly use them all. So if you chart of this week's EES reversal seems like a great example of getting in early on a pullback. Well, I've got like 30 seconds now, so unfortunately, I don't even have my charts up. I'm so sorry. I just don't have time for that. Appreciate that though. Let's see if there's anything else in here. Let's see. Oh, one last one I see here. Oh gosh, there's several that I wasn't really watching the questions box as I was talking here. Specify if the strategy works best with stocks, forex, or futures. Okay, I already did that. Yeah, works with all of them. Works with all of them. All markets are auction places. Prices going up or down. All three of those markets. Again, the bottom line to the bottom line of the bottom line is, yeah, it's all supply demand, whether it's futures, forex, stocks. So on all of them. All right, not seeing any other questions. So I'll turn it back over to our host. Thank you, by the way, very much for coming. And thank you to our host for putting on this